All right, let me jump over here into my opening comments, and I'll tell you, I once had a friend that told me she didn't believe in politics. Well, okay, well, I choose to believe that donuts don't make me gain weight, but they do anyway, whether I choose to believe or not. But that friend of mine, she went a bit further, told me that she had a jaded view of politics and politicians, and I can get that. But then she told me that her silent form of protest was to deliberately not vote. To which I replied that she had just abdicated her right to complain. In other words, get in the game or stay out of the way, but don't complain later if you choose to sit out and didn't like the score. My friend's problem was that she was so busy seeking the perfect that she forgot to appreciate the good. There's no such thing as a perfect politician, but there are some good ones. Look, we're too often caught up in the trap of making the quest for the perfect the enemy of the good. It's a thing. We become purists in which only the perfect version of what we seek is considered good enough and everything else is considered failure. Now, there's something to be said for making an effort to achieve perfection. I get that. I'm the world's worst at putting my quest for the best possible solution on such a pedestal that anything else is considered a loss. But there's times in life, really, when we need to realize that we may not achieve the ultimate version of our idea of success, but we will have nonetheless still succeeded. Case in point. Not long ago, Charlene and I attended the annual Alabama Policy Institute dinner. It was a great night. We were able to share the evening with so many folks with whom we had served in state government or in the trenches fighting for conservative policy. And the speaker that night was Scott Rasmussen. He's a nationally known pollster. He was once the founder of ESPN, the keynote speaker that night. And he gave a great speech. In the course of doing so, he told a story that really piqued my attention, so I had to track it down and verify some of the facts. But y'all, this is fascinating. So, many of you, if you were to do a quick search online, go to the Oracle of Google or whatever, and just reach back in your own memory banks, you might agree that women in America actually won the right to vote in 1920 when the 19th Amendment was ratified. It was a landmark moment. The women's suffrage movement had been working feverishly for decades. So yes, in 1920, women were officially granted voting rights all across America. But Rasmussen pointed out that many do not recall that women actually first obtained the right to vote in certain states that chose to act alone. And the first among them? Wyoming. Wyoming? Yes, Wyoming, our 44th state. Admitted to the Union in 1890. And despite having the 10th largest landmass of any state, it's still one of the least populated. I mean, to this date, the population of Wyoming is less than 600,000 total. I mean, that's something like the combined populations of Huntsville and Mobile with maybe a little of Coleman thrown in. But despite the remoteness and the small population size, the then territory of Wyoming was the first to grant women the right to vote, and they did it in 1869. 1869, just a few years after the Civil War. So how did that happen? Well, Wyoming was a wilderness territory. It was not known as the bastion of progressive public policy. But it turns out that there were a few of the territorial legislators who, you know, favored women's suffrage, okay. But the reality of why it got votes is far less chivalrous. The territorial governor thought that the bill would give the state some notoriety, so he signed it for the publicity. But one of the driving motivators to give women the vote in Wyoming was actually the fact that men wanted women to move to Wyoming. You heard me. In 1869, the rough population of Wyoming was just about 6,000 males and 1,000 females. So loneliness, believe it or not, the desire for female companionship is what drove the train, and the sincere hope of many of the male citizens of the Wyoming Territory was that they simply hoped that by granting the right to vote to women, it might draw more of them to move there. The women's suffrage movement was not very enthused. They saw this as some kind of, I don't know, baseless effort on the part of the men of Wyoming. It did not seem to be the most respectable of enthusiasms for their cause. So the suffrage movement did not fully embrace what was happening in Wyoming. It was only half a century later before Congress decided to pass the 19th Amendment. So I gotta ask though, think about it. Was it wrong for the men of Wyoming to try to improve their odds of getting a spouse by passing an important piece of historic legislation? I mean, is it possible that what was deemed imperfect was still actually good? So here's the thing. I believe that we as conservatives too often get caught up in the trap of letting the quest for the perfect become the enemy of the good. And we do. I've seen it firsthand. I can remember working on pro-life legislation, and there were times when the various factions of the pro-life movement could not agree. It was all or none, ban it outright or lose it all. I'm for that, I get it. But if we could gain enough votes for an 80% solution this time as opposed to none of the votes for 100%, then why not take the 80 and call it a win? It doesn't mean we're through. It just means that's where we are right now. I'm not necessarily an incrementalist. That's not what I'm saying. I love going 100%. In fact, I go 110% on a daily basis. But the truth be told, if we're going to sacrifice any gain at all because it wasn't pure enough, it wasn't perfect enough, then we'll never have the good enough. And to be honest, like I said, I'm a all-the-way kind of person. I don't believe in half measures, generally speaking. If I'm taking a test, my goal is to get a 100% score. I have more than once pursued perfection in my own efforts, but rarely have I ever attained it. We should always strive for the best, but realize that an 80% solution might be what we wind up with, and we can't let her beat ourselves up because of it. Let's don't let ourselves be like the women's suffrage leaders who chose to look down on the victory in Wyoming because they just didn't believe the motives behind it were pure enough. It was a victory, pure and simple. It might not have been perfect, but it was really, really good. I'm saying all this because we're getting down to the nitty-gritty time in this election season. And I'm still watching right now as lines are being drawn once again regarding Donald Trump. It's amazing to me. There are people who I know and care about who are anti-Trump, even to the point that even though they are Republicans and so is he, and he's the nominee, that they would still rather not vote. As if doing so somehow validates their feelings and makes things better. On the other hand, there are those who I talk to that have a nearly godlike view of Trump, like he can do no wrong, something he's honestly not earned. I mean, if Trump had not won the nomination, then they would have automatically gone into shutdown mode, believing the world was coming to a swift end. Look, I personally think that Donald Trump is a pretty incredible person. He did an amazing amount of good things as president during his first four-year term, and I believe he's going to make a good president again, but he is neither a devil nor is he a god. As things stand right now, Donald Trump is the nominee, though, and we are 75 days before the votes will be fully cast in the general election, and anything can happen. In politics, a week is a lifetime. And we have just 7 lifetimes left then, between now and then. So what I'm saying is this. Donald Trump is the nominee, so suck it up, Never Trumpers. Losing to Kamala Harris is the only thing that should count as a true loss at this point. We have to take our country back. We have to reclaim the lost ground, and we cannot afford another 4 years of Kamalanomics, or Kamala foreign policy, or Kamala border policy, or Kamala energy policy, or really Kamala anything. You can pretend that by writing in someone's name or voting for an independent is going to somehow amount to something, but it won't. Not at this point. That was great in the primaries. In the general, we got to get together. You will be taking the strength of your constitutional right to vote and casting that pearl before swine. You vote how you want to, but don't cry later if you're hurting from policies that your anti-Trump vote helped put in place. You will have to own it. Look, bottom line is we cannot let the quest for the perfect candidate, whatever that means in our eyes, become the enemy of the good candidate. What matters right now is that the primary is behind us, and we really need to get behind the next guy who's going to be taking us across the finish line. And right now, the candidate is Donald Trump. We've got to get there, and we've got to get the last 4 years behind us. Even if it's not the perfect job, I do believe he will do a good job, and it will be a good job. That's nowhere. There's nowhere to go but up if the emotions and the hurt feelings and the people who only vote for Mr. Perfect get in the way. Listen, we can still have plenty of room to go down, if you know what I'm saying. Trump is the candidate. If you're anything but an ardent Democrat, he's the candidate. It may not be perfect, but by comparison, it can be really, really good. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Yeah, I'm amazed at some of my brethren and sistren out there who are like, well, I just don't know that I could do it. I just don't know I can do it. Are you going to vote for Joe Biden? I don't like Joe Biden, but I just can't vote for Trump. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Hold your nose and cast your vote. At this point, we are past that point, and the stakes are maybe the highest I've ever seen. Time to get in the game. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.